They were frightened.
I want masks. What is this?
Listen, I'll grant your Felger is crazy.
Here we go.
Man, I got to lay off the peyote.
It was horrendous.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bye! Let's talk some football. Just a general question to start. We'll take your calls early and often for Bedard. So he's here until 4 o'clock. You know the drill. 617-779-0985 is your telephone number. Jimmy, I just logged on, so you can release the hounds immediately. The Patriots on Sunday in New Orleans. How much was that the Patriots, and how much was that New Orleans sucking?
Well, the Patriots executed much better in this game. I mean, in terms of, like, you know, giving up the edge, gaps in the run game, you know, poor execution on offense, you know, like we saw in the first game, there was hardly any of that in this game. So they executed much better, and that you can sort of transfer from team to team. It doesn't matter how good the team is or how weak. You know, as long as they execute well, that's what you're looking for.
But
that being said, the Saints are terrible. They are terrible. And I had it in my column from Sunday. You know, between Bradford and Brady, you know, this is the worst two-game start for a pass defense in NFL history.
What?
Yeah.
Between Bradford and Brady, it's the worst start for a pass defense in NFL history.
Yeah, they've given up.
Just to clarify, that's Sam Bradford. Yeah. We're talking about Sam Bradford.
Okay? I mean, they've given up 80% completion percentage to both guys. I think their combined passer rating is like 147. 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. I mean, it's just, look, I think they're going to be better by the end of the season because they got a lot of youth in the secondary, but they're terrible. I mean, outside of Cameron Jordan, the Saints are brutal. So, look, they executed better. They looked more like the Patriots, but I wouldn't go to the bank with any of that stuff. You know, I mean, that's how bad the Saints are. That being said, thank goodness they got the backs involved. Why didn't they do that against the Chiefs?
Agreed.
I mean, it was, you could tell, and I wrote my column on this, you could tell it was part of the game plan, and it wasn't just because they were down some wide receivers. They went in, I think they threw to the backs 5 times on the first drive. 4 or 5. They threw to them 8 times in the whole game in the opener. So they went out with the mentality, we need to get the backs involved. They should have done that against the Chiefs. It was open. Brady and McDaniels didn't take it for whatever reason, and it really hurt. But this is, I think they found their identity as far as an offense in New Orleans. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big thing against the Texans coming up. Texans are really slow at linebacker. Abuse them with the running backs. You know, I think this is who they are.
Greg, so, okay, and New Orleans sucks. Well, they're horrible, but the Pats made them look horrible. Like that. So that's why I don't, you know.
What do you mean you made them look horrible?
Well, meaning,
They just threw the ball to the running backs.
This is not like they went in there and squeaked out a 3-point win and, you know, overcame a bunch of mistakes.
Right.
No, they were clearly the better team, which is how it should look when
no
you're
question.
Playing someone who's bad. So
yep.
That's like, I mean, that's why I don't take anything away from the opponent. Some weeks I do. This one I don't because they played a bad team and the gap was obvious. The Pats were clearly the better team. All right, so that's one item. We'll get your thoughts throughout the course of your stint here on what you saw on film in that game. The second thing is, and this to me has developed in the most interesting story on the team, Maz, as we go forward, and that is
Butler.
Well, and
not just that.
And Branch.
And Lewis.
And is there, Deion Lewis started really in training camp, and even to a lesser extent, David Harris, but is there some sort of transformation going on here on the roster? Are they in the process, Greg, of sifting through who's with them and who's not, and are they getting younger in the process, and are we just sort of watching this thing that we've seen? It's happened from time to time, where maybe they don't have the right mix, and the next thing you know, they make a couple moves, couple guys are out, couple guys are in, and the team at the end of the year is different. And are we on the verge of seeing that with this team? And Butler and Alan Branch are two guys that are, I think, are at the top of the list right here.
Wait, am I able to talk about body language now?
Yes,
am
please.
Am I okay?
Do it now. Body language.
About Butler?
Let me hear it.
I think there, in my mind, there is no question that the Malcolm Butler phase out has started. I mean, you do not go from this guy playing every snap the past 2 years to all of a sudden he's a matchup role guy against the Saints who have one decent wide receiver. Are you kidding me? So they could say whatever they're going to say, but to me, the phase out has started. Now, that being said, is it going to continue? I don't know, because we saw this before. Wes Welker, I forget which year it was. It was when they lost to the Cardinals in the season opener. I wrote that they were starting to phase out Wes Welker. Of course, that didn't happen. And everybody's like, oh, you don't. No, yeah. No, but I knew from sources going into that, Wes Welker was not in the game plan going into that game. It just happened that Hernandez got hurt, and then Edelman got hurt, and they needed Welker. So that could happen here. But I think, you know, we've seen a pattern. And now, you know, it was Welker. Jamie Collins all of a sudden became a, you know, designated, okay, he's going to play in certain situations, goes from starter to that. And to me, it starts with, this guy doesn't take what the team is offering as far as a contract. You know, we saw Welker, Collins, now Butler, and then all of a sudden that gets Bill thinking about, because pretty soon he's gonna, that guy's not going to be here. So he starts thinking about that, and he says, okay, maybe we can do without that guy in the near term, too. And Eric Rowe has played much better. Jonathan Jones has emerged. All of a sudden Bill says, you know what? I think we're okay. You know, and so we're going to have to see what happens as far as health and you know, whether they can make a deal. But in my mind, the Butler phase-out has started. Alan Branch, I don't know what's going on there, but, you know, Zoe just talked about it, and I saw the same thing on the sideline. Normally when a guy's just in the rotation, he stands there getting ready to play the game. Alan Branch was he looked like he was told, big boy, you're sitting today.
Did he have his helmet off?
Pretty much. On the back of his head, while they're on the field, just watching back, you know, holding the shoulder pads, looked like he had no, he didn't think he was coming in anytime soon.
Didn't Branch get a 2-year deal?
Yes. Yep. I think he did.
So, like, now look, I don't know what the guaranteed money is and everything, but I almost look at him a little differently than I look at, like, Butler.
I look at him like Sheard last year.
Okay, or Welker or any of those guys. Like, but there is a pattern there. There's no, and it's twofold for Belichick, right? Number one, like, it's hard to not get past the idea of you're not as good as you think you are,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's his message to Welker. That's his message to Butler. You're not as good as you think you are. So, not, you know, we offered you something. You're not going to take it, so screw you. The other part of it is you're going to be gone after the year, so I might as well, as you were just saying, so I might as well start integrating this other guy now. Right, I'll make, Jonathan Jones will be that much better for it in 2018, and I'll start it now. I just think that, you know, it feels like on Butler especially, boy, they're pulling the plug fast.
Well, so I just might finish on Branch. Did he get heavy? Did he get bigger?
I thought that, and I mentioned that before when he played in his first preseason game. I think it was the one in Detroit. I forget which game it was. But he went from doing nothing to all of a sudden he's out there, and I was like, gee, I wonder how his conditioning is going to be. He was out there for like 3.5 quarters, and he played great the entire time. So I was like, oh, I guess there's no real problem there. So to me, it's not, okay, you know, guy missed a bunch of training camp, we're trying to acclimate him. No, I mean, he played a lot when he got a chance in the preseason. So to me, that's not it.
Okay, I'm Malcolm Butler. I mean, so, I mean, they
but
are
Branch
different.
Was bad in the opener. I mean, Albert Haynesworth getting shoved around bad
wow.
in the opener.
And he plays 6 snaps, I think it was, here yesterday in New Orleans. But again, different cases. Branch, a veteran guy who's already gotten his money, and you sort of wonder, is he one of those guys? Well, that's my last paycheck, and now it's time to, you know, put your feet up a little bit or to change your habits. We've seen that happen before.
And he could have been, you know, we don't know. He could have been late for a meeting or something like that this week that really ticked them off. I mean, we don't know.
He has a history. Butler, totally different case. You know, Butler, totally different case. Younger guy looking for a contract, doesn't take what the Patriots offer, and does that start the ball rolling on? Well, if we're phasing you out anyway, might as well be sooner rather than later. And is that what we're looking at before eyes with Malcolm Butler? And, oh, by the way, he's not playing that great, Greg. I think if he were playing at the same level, it'd be harder for Bill to do that, obviously. But when he's given up a touchdown a game, which is what it's really turned into when you go back to August, you know, it sort of makes it easier on him, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But I don't think Butler's played that bad. I mean, like, the play in the end zone against the Saints, that wasn't Butler in my mind. That looked like it was Chung, because the way Butler reacted, I think Chung, they were supposed to switch or stay with their guy, and Chung didn't. And it looked like Butler was pretty ticked off at Chung for not executing there. And, you know, yes, he had the pass interference penalty in the first one, but and he had his struggles in the preseason. But I thought, you know, so far he's been okay. I wouldn't say he's been Malcolm Butler number one corner level, but, you know, I think he's been decent. It's not like he's been Alan Branch bad.
I just find this piece to it very interesting. You know, we've seen it many years, many seasons over the years with Belichick. We all have this preconceived notion about what this guy is, that guy is, and what is needed on the defense. And Bill sees something, he sees it early. And the next thing you know, he is cutting Lawyer Malloy, or he's trading Jamie Collins. And we're all sitting there going, what? You know, that, what? How do you get better doing that? And the next thing you know, they're better. And by the end of the year, they've evolved. And And I just wonder if we're just seeing the very early signs of this. I'm just stunned. Alan Branch doesn't surprise me because he's always been a wild card. He is a wild card guy in Buffalo, wild card guy here. Malcolm Butler, I've always taken to be the consummate pro. A badass little competitor who doesn't let those other things affect him. And I'm disappointed and surprised that that he's on this list that we're talking about. But anyway.
I mean, it doesn't. And I've thought the same thing. And I think highly of Malcolm Butler. But, you know, I wasn't making things up when I told you that the first couple days in camp, he was pretty much a country unto himself for a while. Now, it changed after a couple days. But, I think it was Jeff made the point. Why would he go through OTAs and then come back for training camp and cause a problem? That's exactly when guys cause a problem. Because what happens is they're here for OTAs. They're involved. They're in the environment. Then they go home. And all of a sudden, your boys start talking. I can't believe they gave Gilmore $13 million. They won't give you anything. How do you feel about that? How do you think that makes you feel? And, you know, in this week with the Saints, you know, if I was Malcolm Butler and I'm looking across and I see a team that would have given me $10 million a year and I'm playing for a team that I'm making $900,000 and they gave $13 million to Stephon Gilmore, who hasn't won jack in Buffalo, I'd be a little ticked off, too.
Especially when that team across the field can't cover anything. Holy crap. They've given up over 500 yards a game. I was just looking it up, and almost 60% on third down. They blow. Oh, my God, do they blow.
Okay, those are our opening thoughts. What are yours? 617-779-0985.
Felger and Mez. Felger and Mez.
Hey, it's Ed Norris here. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're planning a day out with friends, searching for a last-minute deal, or buying a gift for somebody, SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed, because nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action at the best value. I use them all the time. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals, and you get the best bang for your buck. Because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value and immediately helps you identify the best seats. And do it with color coding, so it makes it very intuitive. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert, comedy, and theater tickets available, too. And best of all, new users get $20 off their first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIVE today. That's promo code LIVE, L-I-V-E, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. See it live with SeatGeek, the right seat, right now, right from your phone.
Blood force drum!
It'll run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Mez on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just on Malcolm Butler, obviously he was moved to the third cornerback spot the other day. Just curious what you've seen from his performance this year and his level of consistency.
Look, I think all of our guys, I think maybe the way that question was worded is not actually, you know, the way I would put it. I think all of our guys are ready to go and they have a role in the game and they play. And they, you know, try to play at the level that we're asking them to play at. And, so certainly we have different packages that we put out there and guys play in different positions, depending on what group is out there. So, I might never know what the first call of the game is going to be. It might be a personnel group that, you know, isn't listed on the flip card. And that doesn't mean that someone is a certain position or not. It just means that that's what we're putting out there to start the game based on what we're getting from an offensive perspective. So I think everybody for us, you know, has to get ready to go. I think Malcolm's, you know, he's kind of in the boat with everybody else. We're trying to get better. We're trying to improve. We're trying to put guys out there, depending on the situation that we have to be in, that can play the defense that we're, you know, that we're asking them to play on that down.
Seriously, it's like Bill being the way he is, it gives license to all these other guys who've done absolutely nothing to act that way as well. Like, was this Bloomington, Indiana? You get to control the questions, too. This ain't Tuscaloosa. Or maybe it is. Maybe we've turned into that. But good God, you didn't like the way the question was phrased? God, he's sounding like such a bitch. God, I hate that. Anyway. he's also saying about the personnel groups and it's a matchup thing. I mean, that's basically what he was implying about Butler starting on the bench, which, again, that makes no sense because we looked it up yesterday. Maz did. The playing time percentage was the last 2 years for Butler was 99% and 97% of the snaps. He never came off in the past, ever.
I'll split the difference with the Pats on that one and call it 98.
98% of the time he's on the field. Now he's not? Why? You don't buy that, Bedard, do you, the matchup stuff?
Nope, because when he did come in, I was just trying to look up the name of the receiver because it slipped my mind. But Michael Thomas, you know, who's
6'3".
Oh, you know, and Coleman's 6'6". But all of a sudden, Malcolm comes into the game, and Yeah, he's covering him. So he's good enough. He's not good enough on the first down, or, you know, when there's only two wide receivers, but when there's multiple, then it's okay that Malcolm can cover him. Okay. Okay.
See, there's a very simple explanation for this. They're lying. That's what it is. They're lying. They're lying about it. They're sticking it to him. And again, I say they're sticking it to him because I think that's part of it. I think part of it is, again, this message of you're not as good as you think you are. We made you. There's some of that. But I think also it's when Belichick writes him off, he says, well, if I'm going to write this guy off, I might as well play the other guy because I got to get him better. And that part of it I agree with. That makes sense. But, you know, it's hard to discern what is personal and what is business.
I just, you know, if before our eyes, we're looking at another thing where, you know, I thought this guy was indispensable, Malcolm Butler. I mean, a little less since Gilmore got here, but I still, you know, I still consider him one of the most important guys on the defense that you can't win without. And what if they say, no, actually not, and they move on from him and they win without him, and, you know, here we go again with another one of these. I think if we're just, are we on the verge of another one of these?
Well, that, and I was just going to ask you, what do you think the chances are before the trade deadline that they are without Butler, Branch, and Lewis?
One of the three? They're not all three going to be here. They're not all three going to be here. Let's start with John Paul and Attleboro. Go ahead, John Paul.
Hey, guys. I thought I heard something about Richard Sherman beginning of the summer. Is he too old?
Not for me. He's only a year older than Butler. There were Richard Sherman. Remember the Richard Sherman trade rumors to the Patriots?
Yep, absolutely.
I wonder where those stand. You know, it's not like Seattle doesn't need to trade Sherman for a corner. They need to trade Sherman for some offensive linemen. Nate Solder for Richard Sherman?
Cam Fleming.
Are there a few offensive linemen you can spare? You think Pete would bite on one of your offensive linemen? Nate Solder, who sucked in the first 2 weeks? But he's a big name. You know, he's a starting left tackle in the league. We'll get to Nate Solder. I know Greg's looked at some film on that.
Maybe you can give him Butler and some extra offensive part. Lewis, I don't know.
But, I mean, could you afford, if you're the Patriots, okay, so Eric Rowe is outplaying him, apparently, and this Jonathan Jones looks good. So are you a little deeper at corner than we thought?
And they made the trade for the Lions special teamer who gives you some depth.
Okay, but is that a corner?
Yeah.
Who is that?
That's Moat. Whatever his name is.
Exactly. Thank you.
I was going to say Bettamisi. Yeah, it was something like that.
But I don't know. Is there a trade there to be had between Butler and to get something up front? To get something at the linebacker core? I mean, maybe. I think you have to start thinking about this
well,
right now.
Yeah, but you also have to factor in that the Patriots have no more cap space left. So, I mean, they would have to generate it, which Michael says you can do anytime you want, they don't.
Give me a cocktail napkin, and I'll do it for you in about 2 minutes. I'll carve out some room for you. Here's Seth in Taunton. Go ahead, Seth.
Hey, guys. I know you guys are talking about more of the defensive side of the ball, but I'm telling you right now, we need another wide receiver. With Edelman down and the fragility of every other one of our receiving options, I'm saying you either go beg the Bills to let you have Bolden out of retirement, or the best thing I could ever see happening with this team is if we could pry Cole Beasley away from the Cowboys.
Oh,
and not just because he's a little white receiver that fits our mold. He's 28.
Let me stop you. Why is Dallas giving up that player? They're not. But I would love him, too. I think he's the closest thing to Julian Edelman in the league.
Yeah.
Do they need a receiver, Greg?
I mean, it depends on the long-term health. I mean, they'll get Mitchell back at some point. I mean, we don't know exactly what happened, but with the time frame, it looks like he got scoped, and he should be back in 4 to 6 weeks, whenever he can be back. And he's a guy that has Brady's trust. And, you know, Amendola, who knows? I mean, I expect him back this week, but we'll have to see.
I still want defense. I still think they can patch it together.
Linebacker. I want a linebacker. They're going to get someone there to go with Hightower.
But I thought, Greg, and again, we'll get into it. I just, the way Wise played, finally he looked the way you were talking. The way Adam Butler played, finally he played the way you were talking.
How about that?
You had a good week,
guys,
Greg.
Yeah.
Your guys.
You did. Yeah. You had a better week than Brady.
Jonathan Jones, like, I wasn't counting on these guys to be a factor this year. If those guys are a factor this year, I look at the defense a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously.
Yes, I was high on Wise and Butler, but still, you know, those guys are young. Wise, you worry a little bit about, and I wrote this in my column when I was touting him, you worry a little bit about injuries. I mean, he has that kind of frame. He's big, long legs, long arms. But he told me he's never had any injury problems, and he's wearing knee braces.
But again,
so.
I mean, we talked about the depth up front, the depth on the edge, the pass rushing. if Dedrick Wise is a player, you've just answered some of those questions. That's
sure,
It's a big development.
I'm still holding out hope that Ninkovich comes back at some point, too. I'm not letting that one go.
Joe and Lincoln, go ahead.
Hey, since Bedard is on a hot streak, I want to float my Tom Brady can play till age 45 theory by him. And here's, you know, of all the attributes you think about that a quarterback, you know, needs, there's physical, but there's also leadership, there's competitiveness, there's experience, there's intelligence. Brady has four out of those five, unquestionably, even at age 45. And physically, who knows how much is going to be diminished. I think he's going to still be a valuable quarterback at age 45.
Joe's got him playing to 45. You guys?
No. No, you know how I feel about this. Now, look, like I chuckle every time someone says he can play till he's 45. Sure. Yeah, he can. I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. The question is whether or not you would bet on it if you're the Patriots.
Right.
If you're Bill Belichick, can you plan it that way? It's not an issue of whether he can. Of course he can. But the question is, how does Belichick have to manage it? Belichick cannot manage it thinking, I'm going to have this guy in 4 years.
Right. You can't look at him as like, okay, he's 29 now, so in 5 years, you know, I know what he could still be in his prime. We're in uncharted territory right now. It's year to year. You know what? Yes, he looks good now, but, you know, 40 to 45 is a huge leap.
Real, Matthew and Rivera, real quick, we're talking football, but I don't want to keep on the board for two straight hours. Just ask Maz your Red Sox question quickly.
I'm talking about his contract situation and him being in the bullpen.
Him being David Price. He has a question about David Price's contract situation.
Price,
go.
Yes. Yeah, the David Price situation, yeah. So we're talking about him being in the bullpen and him not being in the starting rotation, and you're paying him $30 million, and you want Doug Fister in the rotation? This is crazy to me.
Okay, how does Price's contract impact how they use him in the postseason?
I don't think it does this year. Going
should
forward,
it?
No, not this year.
They pay him
no.
$31 million to pitch in the seventh inning?
So what? I mean, at this stage, it's over. Like, you do what's best for your team, and I don't think you can get him ready in time, so you bite the bullet. That's it. You don't let the money make the decisions. If that's the case, then, you know, Pablo Sandoval should still be here, for crying out loud. You can't do it by the money. No, zero.
Can okay. I ask you something
please.
About this?
Yeah.
What if Price goes into the bullpen, you know, for the playoffs, and what if all of a sudden he emerges as sort of like an Andrew Miller type? And, like, this is like his reclamation project. Like, he's almost like the savior. Could you see that happening?
No.
Is he going to be able to pitch back-to-back days?
Because
or anything?
You don't think he'll be successful in the role?
I don't completely rule it out, but I don't think he has the balls to be Andrew Miller.
Okay, we're going to pick that up, but really in earnest at 4 o'clock. You can call us on whatever you want. We have a 3 up and 3 down, though, right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, I'm Mike Reese from Sports Radio 94 at WIP. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. And whether you're planning a day out with friends, searching for a last-minute deal, or buying a gift for a loved one, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert, comedy, and theater tickets available too. Best of all, new users get $20 off their first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIVE today. See it live with SeatGeek. Right seat, right now, right from your phone.
Thanks for ending your workday with Felger and Mads. On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com. Now, it's time for 3 Up.
Throws down low to Fernando. Ball's tipped. And Julian diving for it. Did he make the catch?
He's got it.
He did.
And 3 Down.
Airborne to the uprights. And the kick bangs off the right upright. The reading.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. 3 Up.
Driving forward. He's
diving to the goal.
It's
a touchdown!
And a title! 3 Down.
Jack and Seth Garoppolo throws down the middle, and it's deflected and nearly intercepted before it was nearly caught by Edelman.
That's 3 weeks in a row.
Here on Felger and Mez.
All right, we've reviewed the film. We've compiled our charts. And when I say we, of course, I mean Greg. Maz and I have done nothing of the like.
Well, I have a photographic memory. I don't need to.
We're just pulling it out of our copious keisters. Greg does.
And they are copious.
Greg's actually done the work. Have we sent the charts to the simulcast? Oh. We have. Thank God the charts are back. Sacks, hit, hurries, total quarterback pressures, run stuffs, etc.
Nate Solder had almost as many quarterback pressures as Dietrich Wise.
Quick, Murray, you were there. How many run stuffs? I'm sorry. How many total quarterback pressures did David Andrews allow?
I don't know.
Three. How many run stuffs did he allow?
I'll say two.
Three. Doesn't seem like a good day for David Andrews.
Nope. His name here? Bedard is still pining for Alex Karras.
So the Patriots allowed 13 total.
Steady Teddy.
13 total quarterback pressures, 9 run stuffs. That doesn't feel great. What's the other side of the ball? Do we have the defensive metrics here? Vinny? Okay, there we go. Dietrich Wise, as you would expect. 3 hits, 1 sack, 1 hurry, 5 total quarterback pressures, 1 run stuff.
Hey, if he could go up against Anders Pete every week, he'd be in the Hall of Fame by the end of the year.
So let's not diminish what the young man did, shall we? Okay, and Greg's tweeted this out. It's now on the simulcast, so you see it. All right, fine. You didn't tweet it out. Whatever. There's the chart. 3 up, 3 down. Who's your first star for the Patriots?
Brady. I mean, his first half was sensational. That being said, I didn't think he was great in the second half. And including, I know you guys have talked about the field goal operation at the end of the first half. What was Brady doing?
Well, it might have been a bad decision to start.
Where was he going? Did he think he was going to run into the end zone?
Said that yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, why not just throw it out the back of the end zone? I didn't really understand that, but he was great.
Look, I know it's boring, and I typically refrain from doing this, but Brady. I mean, they needed someone to come out and take control of the game early, and Brady did that, and to me, that's what a leader does.
The thing is, the too many men interception was, you know, he saw the Manti Te'o late, and so he just chucked it up there. But after that, he had 3 or 4 balls that could have been intercepted. Yes. One was, it was a holding penalty against Gronk that was brought back, the right call. But after that, he started to get a little loose with the ball, I thought.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think Brady needs to work. He needs to watch some Rodgers film to work on those guys aren't off the field or in encroachment penalties and throwing it, because normally you try to make a play, like throw it to a receiver, not to like 3 defenders where it has no chance.
Second star.
Dietrich Wise. He was great. 5 total quarterback pressures. He's a tough block. I mean, you know, you look, and Bill talked about this, I think, the other day. You look at a guy his size, and a lot of those guys have trouble with pad level because they can get moved around. But he does a really good job, and he's tough. Long arms, tough to block.
I'm scowling because I have the same guy second, Dietrich Wise. He was excellent in this game, and they're going to need him to be.
Third.
I have Gronk because he had so many plus plays, but he did have some issues in this game. He had a good block, run block on a touchdown, but outside of that, he was a little shaky blocking in the run game. He also had the, you could call it a drop. It was 50-50. I mean, he made a great adjustment to get there, to be open, to flip around, but normally he has that.
Yeah, screw Gronk. He can't drop a touchdown and make my list as far as I'm concerned. I went Jonathan Jones. I thought he was good. So to me, he and Wise both in there with Brady. The rest of the traditional picks, to me, no. Those other two guys make it.
3 duds, Greg.
Patrick Chung. I couldn't really tell being live how poor he was, but on film, he was 3 steps behind everything. And you will get these games from him every once in a while. He'll have these games where he just looks like he's not dialed in. And then he'll come back next week and play awesome. But he was not good in this game.
I said yesterday, I thought their safety play yesterday, other than McCourty
was really good.
Yeah, other than McCourty, their safety play in this game sucked. But I went with the corners, Butler and Gilmore, first. I didn't think either one of them was good. I don't think either one of them has been good for 2 weeks. It's supposed to be the strength of the team. I combined them as my number one down.
Can we talk about for a second about Stephon Gilmore getting shoved down on one switch route,
yes,
and then sort of just staying on the ground for an extra 3 or 4 seconds on his knees, watching the play, not getting up, chasing down the field till way after? That was a little Buffalo-ish.
A little Buffalo-like?
Yes.
Interesting. We'll keep an eye on that, shall we? Second dud there, Greg.
David Andrews, the center. Normally he's really good instead of, when he goes against these teams that have some strength and power on the interior, he can have a tough time, and he did against the Saints.
Safeties other than McCourty, Chung and Harmon. I thought Harmon sucked too in this game. So I combined the two of them. Chung is brutal in coverage. He is, which we knew, and we've always known. Harmon wasn't much better. Remember the play down the sideline there, how late he was getting there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was awful.
Third dud.
Solder. you know, he's off to a rough start, and to me, he doesn't look right.
Is this one foot out the door? Like, we were talking about, weren't the retirement rumors going into the year?
Well, I wrote in training camp about how, you know, if there was one guy on the Patriots that you could see walking away, it would be him. He's a biology major. I'm sure he's reading all these studies. He's gotten a second contract, so he's made money. And the whole thing, you know, with his son. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I do think he hasn't gotten a contract extension offer, as far as I know. And he's going into a contract year, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots lowball him and say, you know, you can leave if you want, but we have Tony Garcia if we ever see him again.
Steven Goskowski.
Oh, you love doing that.
Shanks the clown. Like, you know, even though I told you that 27-yarder that he made or whatever, he just squeaked it inside of that right upright. Now here I am again. My knees are knocking every time Shanks gets back there and ready to line one up. Whether it's an extra point or a field goal.
Studs and duds from the game. In the book, your calls, I promise, in our long commercial-free segment right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
Hey, I'm Mike Reese from Sports Radio 94 at WIP. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. And whether you're planning a day out with friends, searching for a last-minute deal, or buying a gift for a loved one, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert, comedy, and theater tickets available too. Best of all, new users get $20 off their first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIVE today. See it live with SeatGeek. Right seat, right now, right from your phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Well, going back to that touchdown, this is what makes Bill Belichick special. Okay, we're in this meeting, production meeting. Sean Payton says, we're trying to find tendencies, all of our analytics. See these five guys right here? They're going to rush the quarterback. They love to drop two of those guys out all the time. But Belichick says, hey, you know what? We're one this game. We're fine. I'm going to rush all five. You know why? Because analytics, when they go through next week, they're going to all want to say, what percentage do they play man and rush five? He just added to that number right there by blitzing five guys and showing the people, hey, 50% of the time he does this. 50. You never get a beat on what he's going to do. He throws away little stuff like that to just make your analytics get thrown off. It's really smart.
In all the guffawing of Tony Romo, this was one point that Patriots fans, of course, loved. So the Patriots give up a late touchdown. And Romo comes out and says and does a replay where they sent an extra rusher down there. They sent five down by the goal line.
It was by design.
And he says, well, that's just them breaking tendencies. So the next time you look at him on film, you can't get a tendency on them on what they're going to do in that situation. Jeremy New York wrote in, said, I'm hoping you and Tony can ask Bedard about this thing that Tony Romo said late in yesterday's broadcast, that Belichick will use throwaway opportunities to mess with advanced analytics of other teams. He says, Romo used a blitz example to say that once the game is decided, Bill blatantly goes against the grain to give future opponents something else to think about. Is this yet another example of Bill showing you he's the smartest guy in the room? Or is he just getting credit he doesn't deserve for a blown play? What do you think, Bedard?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, yes, you know, he did that to break tendency a little bit. But, you know, these other teams, they get cut-ups of certain situations. That's what they're studying. They're not just studying a black and white sheet with numbers on it, saying, like, in this situation, these are the chances that you're going to get. I can tell you, I know the Texans, because I've been in coaches' meetings with them. They will look at cut-ups of certain situations. Give me all the third downs. Give me all the third down in shorts, third down in mediums. They'll look at all that stuff.
Third down red zone.
Yep. They'll do all that stuff. And, yes, does this help a little bit? But, you know, I wouldn't go nuts. I don't think, you know, teams are saying, oh, well, because there's, first of all, it's the second game of the season. So there's not a whole lot to go on. They're not going on a lot of tendencies yet. But
I think, okay, so my opinion?
Yep.
It is complete and utter caca. Garbage. And I hate this kind of analysis. I know it drives Maz nuts, too. It's like, oh, So the only time they allow a play is when they allow you to score.
Right, they do it on purpose. You know, by design.
They didn't. If they meant to win the game, they would have meant it. You know, they would have won it. But they didn't want to show too much to the next team, or there was this, that, or the other. They didn't want anyone to get a beat on them, so they took it easy on that player, took it easy in that game. If they wanted to win or to make the play, they would have made it. So the only time anyone can have success against the Patriots is when they allow it to happen. From on high. It's by design.
I mean, you know, it's starting to occur to me why Patriots fans are so high on Romo, because he spent the whole day sniffing Brady and Belichick's underwear.
God.
Like, seriously, don't you think, though?
Yes.
I mean, all he did was rave about Brady and Belichick the whole day.
But specifically that one. They give up a touchdown, and they sent an extra rusher, and it cost them. They sent a fifth guy, I think, and it cost them. It helped cost them the play in 7 points.
Yeah, it was by design.
And Romo comes out and says, this is the brilliance of Bill Belichick. So, like, what am I doing? Wait, really, this is what I'm watching? And let me tell you something. And this is, you know, I don't know much, but I do know this because Bill told me once. And I can't remember if it was off to the side or it might even been at the podium on like a Football Friday, Greg, when he used to tell you more than normal. But I remember it distinctly and I followed it and I know it because I know this about Bill. He likes to send extra pressure in the red zone defensively.
Yes, short. He does short yardage and in red zone. They like to. That's when they usually send pressure.
That is a tendency of Bill, and it has been for years. Dare I say a decade?
Mm-hmm.
How did it work in Super Bowl 42?
I was just going to ask about Ellis Hobbs being left with Plaxico.
Okay, so Bill made that call. You talk to anyone, Bill sent that call in. That the Plaxico burst. So it doesn't always work, and it seems to me like it doesn't work a lot. But Bill's rationale is when you're down there in the red zone, it's got to go quicker. It's got to get out quick, and so you got to get there. And so it's just a thing that he has. He sends extra pressure in the red zone. This was first and goal at the 4. They sent extra pressure, which he always does. And they give up a touchdown. And Romo comes out and says, well, that's why Bill Belichick's smarter than everybody.
Yeah.
Like, this is, please, would you, you know, you want to go on and on about the brilliance of the Patriots, do that second quarter field goal. That actually worked and they got points on. And to be fair, you could point out that Brady probably shouldn't have scrambled in the first place, but that the play actually worked and you scored points. I don't want to hear how smart they are when they give up points. God, I hate that.
The brilliance of Bill Belichick.
So it's like...
Romo was really good in that game, but you know he wasn't right about everything. Like, there was that play where the Patriots took a timeout or got a penalty when Hogan went in motion, and Romo said... You know, Brady was saying, where are you going? You know, no. Brady was looking at Gronk. Gronk was wrong on that play and screwed everything up. It wasn't Hogan.
I'm telling you, Romo, seriously, Romo was sniffing Patriot underwear show.
You want to sniff it when they succeed on a play, that's fine. Show me what they did and how they're smarter than the other team, and I got it. So I get. But when they give up a touchdown, all of a sudden that proves the brilliance?
Oh, no. It was planned that way.
That's just a little much for me.
Yeah, he's worried about the point differential getting too high.
God. Like, no, they allowed it to. You think Bill just, Willie just, yeah, you know what? We'll give up a touchdown here because on film down the road, this is going to help us.
You know, as you talked about sending pressure in the red zone, the first thing that popped into my head was Ellis Hobbs being left with Plaxico in that Super Bowl.
Yes.
Oh, God, what a mistake that was.
But look at Bill frequently. It's a trend. It's a tendency of his. It's a belief in his. You need to get to the quarterback quicker in the red zone. And so he sends pressure in the red zone, or he always has.
I mean, it makes some sense. I'll give him that, right? You get shorter, you know, a shorter field. The quarterback, the ball's coming out. Like, I get the logic. I just didn't love leaving Ellis Hobbs on Plaxico.
So anyway, back to the
10 years later.
Steve in New York. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I got a quick question for Bedard and then real fast question for Felger. Bedard, seriously, do you think on the fly over the next 3 months that Belichick and Patricia could kind of revamp the D with guys like Wise, Jonathan Jones, Van Noy, the Fat Butler kid, Roberts, Guy, as like the new core, a championship core? And second for Felger, I found out last Thanksgiving that my wife was pregnant with our first baby. So I didn't take any vacation time the entire year.
Good job.
I kind of saved it all until the baby was born in August. And then I built up so much goodwill that I got 4 weeks off. Does that make me a soft millennial or a hardworking old school guy?
It shows that karma works, Steve. It shows karma, the power of karma. Save your vacation time. Don't take it on the company's time. Take it on your time. Anyway, I don't know if they can or not build a defensive core or a defensive defense, you know, a championship caliber defense out of that group. But I'm interested to see if that's what is actually happening here before our eyes. Like I said,
I mean, I just think they're they're trying to, you know, they're trying to evolve a little bit, but I don't think it's any, there's any grand scheme. I think this is where they are personnel wise, and, you know, so certain guys got to play.
Well, this is where they are, but fine. Can those kids play? You know, can those guys actually play?
I mean, from what I've seen from training camp to preseason to now, yeah, they can. But can, you know, can they last a whole season? And how much do you want to rely on them? And
sure, look,
you know,
and they may be stuck relying on them. And there's going to be a rookie wall for these guys. I don't know, Greg. It's not just this season; it's overall. I think the young defensive talent's a big issue in the organization. They've lost a bunch of draft picks, or, you know, they lost one for cheating. They traded one away for Brandon Cooks. They had no picks in the first or second round this year. They had only one pick in the second last year, and that's Cyrus Jones, and he sucks and he's hurt. So it's like, this is going to catch up to you, but unless Dedrick Wise can play and Adam Butler can play and Jonathan Jones can play and these kids can play, that changes the outlook there. I think that's a really important story.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think they can play, but what is the ceiling for those guys? I mean, there's a reason why players get drafted in a certain place or in Adam Butler's case.
So how come you're talking down about Dedrick? In training camp, you're talking about Dedrick Wise like he was Lawrence Taylor, and now you're talking down to him. Why?
I'm just talking about the group, not him.
You're just
specifically
being contrarian, which I respect. You're just being contrarian. That's
I'm just
all you're
saying...
Being.
You know, what is the ceiling for these guys?
Dedrick Wise, it should be high. I thought he was a big injury concern.
I think that Dedrick Wise could be a star here. Yes. But outside of that, Adam Butler could be a good defensive tackle. Landon Roberts could be a middling linebacker. Who else? Jonathan Jones? I don't think he could be as good as Butler.
Can he be a starter in the league?
Can he be a slot guy?
Pretty much that's his ceiling, in my opinion.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's how much nickel everybody plays.
I think Wise has the highest ceiling out of any of them when he gets to fill out his body.
The thing you wrote about Wise, the third day of training camp, do you remember this? The pages were stuck together. You had your pants off.
You mean the web pages on Boston Sports Shock.
Yes, well, you know, the proverbial web pages were stuck together. You were pleasuring yourself. You were so high on this player.
I think you were sniffing his underwear.
Part of
seriously, no, but hold on, I don't get this. So you tout this guy, and then he flashes in week two and looks awesome. And now you're sitting here telling us, well, you know, I don't know what his ceiling can be. And then now, like, you're like on the other side. I don't get what. So what happened there? Did he diss you for an interview or something?
No. Dedrick Wise is a very pleasant young fellow. And I was talking about the group, okay? Him, I just said, he has the highest ceiling, and he could be a star. Now, you know, that being said, the rest of the group, I don't know. I don't think they're that good.
Greg, there was a day where we had the Kyrie Irving trade.
Adam Butler.
12 hours before everybody else. We had it. And instead, I let you prattle on about Adam Butler. I gave you that. Biggest professional mistake of my career. I let you do that. Now
he's blaming me.
Adam
continues
Butler,
to blame
he
me.
Actually
it's
plays,
your show.
He actually plays well. He actually flashes. And you're telling me, he's just another defensive guy.
Because he went against Andrews Pete. Douglas. I'm not going to go nuts.
Who is Andrews Pete? I don't
he
care who
sucks.
Andrews Pete is.
He's brutal. He can't play guard. Then they had him at left tackle, and he freaking sucks.
So he's the Cam Fleming of the Saints.
Yes, I'm not going nuts over Dedrick Wise against Andrews Pete and Ramczyk on the other side. Like, I'm just not.
I have a hard time.
But
I can't figure
the
you
other
out.
The other part of the equation with Wise, why I thought it could be a stars, some of it had to do with on the field, but some of it had to do with his personality. The kid is just, he's an awesome kid. He gives great interviews. He's fun-loving. He's got a great smile. It's that.
Oh,
he's
it's
got personality.
Smile? Yeah, it's the smile.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So for the smile.
You know, Connor McDermott.
It is funny, though, because in the preseason, you did have a raging Dietrich.
Oh, my God. You would have thought.
You know what?
Andre Tippett.
Jameel Douglas.
I'm in on Dietrich.
Felger and Mav. Felger and Mav.